WrestleSpective Radio is not affiliated with World Wrestling Entertainment, TNA Wrestling, Ring of Honor Wrestling, or any other sports entertainment entity or personality.
You're listening to WrestleSpective Radio. Learn to love it.
Hello, and welcome to WrestleSpective Radio at FairToFlare.com. And we're continuing our series of podcasts talking about the final matches in WrestleMania history. And today we're talking about Hulk Hogan and the Ultimate Warrior at WrestleMania 6. And with me is returning is Fat Man After Dark from the Future Endeavors podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm fantastic.
Good to hear. Good to hear. So
it's good to be with a host that has a mellifluous voice and intelligence that we don't get on Future Endeavors. When our host, our good friend DX Omega, tries to do anything, he sounds like he has 150 marbles in his mouth. So it's wonderful to be here on WrestleSpective and FairToFlare.com with a real professional.
Well, I do my best. Appreciate the kind words. And you know, I know that Don does his best, and he's a nice guy, so we try not to mock him too much or anything.
Well, he's slow, so we have to be nice to him.
Fair enough. So, WrestleMania 6, this match, pretty big deal in WrestleMania history and in WWE history, I would say.
Oh yeah, absolutely. One of the biggest of my childhood, to be sure. And something that I remember having the pay-per-view, watching it, laying on my parents' bed in their bedroom, the whole card, and you know, just being into it, the whole thing, and remembering, you know, you have so many strange things you remember, but one of the biggest memories of WrestleMania 6, the whole card for me, was when Steve Martin was playing the piano with the Bolsheviks. In the locker room. I just thought that was hilarious. And then he made a joke. He came out on commentary, made a joke that Jimmy Snuka was wearing his wife's underwear.
Oh, that was Steve Allen.
Steve Allen. Yes. What did I say?
It's Steve Martin, which confused me. I'm like, I don't remember Steve Martin.
They're all the same.
Yeah, every Steve is the same.
None of this matters. anyway, yeah, Steve Allen. Steve Allen.
Yes.
But yeah, it's funny what you remember from those cards, because that's something that still sticks in my brain for that card. And, you know, Roddy Piper dressing up in half black, and Andre the Giant turning face, and kind of having his last little mini run in WWE before retiring, and he would end up passing away about 3 years later. Mm-hmm. So, and then, of course, the main event, title for title. Champion versus champion, as President Jack Tunney said, one of, if not the biggest main event for my childhood, to be sure, and one that has become a iconic and legendary as we have a resurgence of people in our generation that are into wrestling.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, the interesting thing about the build of this match is how little they really did. Like, I mean, they basically, you know, from what I remember, they had a confrontation at the Royal Rumble where, you know, they basically, you know, they kind of butted heads and did a small sequence and kind of pushed each other, and I think they did some rope running and all of that, and then, you know, whatever heel came in, and then that was basically that.
I think it might have been like the Warlord or Barbarian or.
Yeah.
Somebody came in, yeah.
Yeah. So, but I mean, that was really it. I mean, it was basically, you know, Hogan was the dominant champion. He'd been, you know, other than the, you know, the Randy Savage reign, he'd basically been champion for the last, you know, 6 years, and, you know, been the top guy for that time, and then Warrior was kind of the upstart, and he'd been the, you know, the Intercontinental Champion. He did lose it for briefly to Rick Rude, but you know, he obviously was just, you know, the number two guy, and you know, he and people were really, really into him, and you know, he was about Hogan's size, and you know, had the big muscles, and just, you know, had a obviously, you know, different vibe with the face paint, and you know, was kind of, you know, more even crazier than Hogan, and Hogan could be pretty intense sometimes, but you know, they just had a, you know, a really weird chemistry that, you know, that very much worked, and you know, and obviously, you know, was in Toronto at the Sky Dome, and they, you know, drew a, you know, really big audience, and you know, it was, but yeah, but it wasn't like they ran like a bunch of angles or did, you know, or a contract signing or, you know, had a bunch of matches, you know, a bunch of tag matches to set up. It was just, you know, they were both really over. They had one confrontation that built interest, and then they did the match.
Yeah. It wasn't like Hogan and Andre where it was months of back and forth and contract signings and battle royals together. And, you know, even after WrestleMania, they were still feuding into the next WrestleMania. You're right. This kind of came together basically the way things come together now, where from the Royal Rumble, where they had their confrontation, into WrestleMania, that's really that all the build was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which worked. I mean, they, you know, it was very, I mean, they didn't need to do more, which is a nice thing. And they didn't try to overdo it. They just, you know, they did what they did, and that was great. So, and
well, how many times can you hear the Warrior, you know, tell Hulk Hogan to put the plane into a nosedive into the Sky Dome and open up the heavens? And how many times can you hear Hogan putting his Harley Davidson into the water and in California? I mean, these two guys could cut some crazy promos. And you're right, people think about the Warrior and Randy Savage cutting crazy promos, but Hogan could cut ridiculous promos.
Yes.
And it got worse when he went to WCW. I know Boxermania likes to make fun when he does the Yappa Pie strap match with Ric Flair, where he's slapping the strap down, losing his mind. So Hogan and the Warrior could both go as far as crazy promos went. And you're right. You know, they did the right amount to where WrestleMania, like, it was at a fever pitch. And it was exciting. Like, I remember the Jack Tunney announcement when he said this was going to be the main event. And I was just – I was marking out. You know, I was 8 years old or 9 years old then. And I would probably still mark out the same way if it were something as exciting as that.
Mm-hmm. And also, I mean, it was really a big deal for the, you know, for the WWF champ and the Intercontinental champ to face off. Like, that was, that was a really big element. I mean, that wouldn't mean anything today, but that was, you know, the title versus title aspect was a huge part of it, I think, of the interest, you know?
Absolutely. And because you didn't see that then. And I used to read all the Bill Apter mags, and they would make the Intercontinental Champion the number one contender, and they make the U.S. Champion in WCW or in the NWA the number one contender. And I used to kind of get a little pissed off in my 8 and 9 year old markish way that, well, they're the number one contender, but we never see them take on the champion. Why is Hulk Hogan taking on Ted DiBiase and Ted DiBiase is only the number eight contender? Why isn't he taking on the number one contender? And so that was exciting because you got this thing. And in my mind, I was trying to envision, could I see Hulk Hogan with the Intercontinental title? And I never was able to see it in my mind. I don't know why. I just never saw. It never worked for me. And this was one of the reasons why I was telling the kids at school and everything that I just thought the Ultimate Warrior was going to win. And I don't – spoiler alert, the Ultimate Warrior does win. But I think if you're listening to this podcast, you've probably seen WrestleMania 6. This would not be a good point for you to start like your wrestling history. You should have a good idea about wrestling history before you're listening to this particular podcast. But even when the result happened, I was still shocked. But I remember telling kids, like telling people that I thought Warrior was going to win.
Yeah, and I remember. I don't exactly remember what I thought. I mean, it would have been weird for the idea of Hogan to win the Intercontinental title, but I mean, I'd never seen Hogan lose, you know, cleanly. I mean, the only match, you know, that I'd seen him lose would have been, you know, the Andre set a main event match, you know,
the Hebners.
Yeah, the Hebners. Yeah. Well, you know, where they, basically he kicked out at two, but the ref counted anyway. And then it was revealed that it was, you know, the evil twin thing. So,
cause Earl Hebner is the evil twin. So it really was, they actually did a precursor 10 years before the Montreal screw job of knowing that Earl Hebner was the evil twin.
Yeah, that's pretty pretty remarkable foresight in WWE's part. But, you know, it's pretty, you know, so the idea of Hogan losing was, I mean, it would be like Superman losing almost. Like, it just was, you know, like almost impossible for me to believe. But I mean, Warrior at this point was built pretty, you know, was a big thing too. So it was hard to believe that he would lose. So it was, you know, it's the thing you build, you know, two guys who you don't think can lose, and then, you know, see, you know, one of them obviously has to win. So,
absolutely. And it's so different now because, you know, even though we say, well, you know, obviously they're going to put John Cena over here. It's not like John Cena hasn't lost a lot of matches.
Right.
Like,
right.
There's really. Right. You know, with the exception of maybe like Hunter and The Undertaker and maybe people like that, you know, all of the big name stars in WWE now have lost tons of matches. It's not a big deal. I mean, Cena was pinned this week. I mean, it was kind of in a screw jobby way, but I mean, Cena was pinned by Heath Slater, for God's sake.
Yeah, and the previous week, CM Punk also it was pinned, so a couple weeks in a row.
It's totally. You know, the 80s and early 90s was just a totally different era where they really protected people, especially in the WWF with Hogan and the Warrior, where they really protected the top baby face. Yeah. And I mean, you can really name the men who have cleanly beat Hogan throughout his career. I mean, you can name a handful, but even to this day, there's not that many you can name that have cleanly beaten Hogan in a singles match.
Yeah, yeah.
This was like an enormous deal.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, today there's, you know, the 52 weeks of first-run matches. I mean, you know, back in 1990, there were four pay-per-views, and there was, you know, you would have like a, you know, a star-versus-star little match on television, but that would just be your main event. And Hogan, you know, Hogan never wrestled on television. Warrior, at this point, probably was still wrestling on television. I probably, when he won the title, he stopped wrestling on television.
Would have a main event like, you know, Hercules versus fill in the blank, Ted DiBiase versus fill in the blank. And you may see, you know, Hogan may, you know, do an interview or something, but you were not seeing Hogan wrestling on free TV at this point.
Right. So, you know, it was obviously a different circumstance from the top stars who, of course, wrestle on TV every week and 12 times a year pay-per-view. So it's, you know, it makes sense that, you know, those guys have to lose some in those circumstances. So it's just a different atmosphere. But yeah, I mean, certainly, you know, both these guys were, you know, hugely larger than life in just, you know, and it was really, you know, in my mind, it was, you know, it was pretty much toss up. So, as far as, you know, and Hogan and Warrior at the time did not have great reputations for their wrestling acumen, particularly the Warrior. So the fact that this match ends up really being one of the better main events in WrestleMania history is pretty, pretty remarkable.
Yeah, absolutely. The fact that I can't think of another match of its length that the Warrior ever participated in that was ever any good. The Warrior was known for coming in, blowing up, you know, before he even made it to the ring, you know, pinning someone in 2 minutes and just totally dominant and squashing. And anytime they ever had any matches that were longer, you know, he probably had good matches with Rick Rude. That might have been like 7 or 8 or 10 minutes, but I can't think of a better match he ever had forever long the main event was. And I don't know exactly. You might have the time on it, but I can't think of another match of Warrior's career that was better than this one for the length of time it was.
Yeah, I'd probably say the Savage matches, the WrestleMania 7 match and the SummerSlam 92 match would be the ones. It would be in the league. Would be very close. And those were both about the same length. I think they're all kind of around 20 minutes. But yeah.
I would definitely agree that especially the WrestleMania 7 one, I'm not a big fan of their match at SummerSlam 92. I know it's not a popular opinion, but I've seen it multiple times trying to like it more, and I've just never made my toes tingle. But no, the WrestleMania 7 match with Savage is right up there as well. Mm-hmm.
As far as the match goes, it's very like, you know, just kind of the way it's paced is very interesting. One thing you talked about with Warrior blowing up, I mean, he had to run down the entire length of the Sky Dome to, running down the aisle to the ring. So, and even Jesse, you know, Ventura points out kind of how stupid it was for him to do that. It's amusing, you know, that, I mean, he's clearly, you know, kind of tired, you know, for a while, although he's, you know, kind of able to have enough energy to make it through the match, and, you know, and he's in the right place pretty much on everything. So, you know, it worked out pretty well. But, I mean, it's very basic, you know, it's kind of, they start out, you know, they're very even, you know, do a shoving match, and then they trade lockups, and then they do test of strength thing, and then they kind of, you know, they both, you know, get moves, and the other, and they trade slams, and they both kind of just don't sell the slams, you know, just kind of the, you know, what you do isn't hurting me, and then, oh, now what you do isn't hurting me. And then kind of and then that's the point where Warrior clotheslines Hogan outside, and then Hogan, like, is, you know, like, he's, like, he's popped his knee, like, he's limping, and, you know, it's like, oh, you know, the first hint of vulnerability. And, you know, Warrior kind of goes after the knee, and then they do some brawling, which makes Jesse happy to see the Goody Two-Shoes guys going after each other.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And at that point, then, you know, Hogan does make a comeback right away, and his knee is apparently fine, which I always like when Gorilla tries to make medical explanations for things, that he just it was just a temporary dislocation, and, you know, it's fine. So it's like, you know, even though it's just kind of silly, like I like that he at least tried to make it make sense. And, you know, when I was 11 when this, or 10 when this match happened, and I bought it. So good job, Gorilla.
Yeah. Gorilla's medical background makes perfect sense to a kid.
Yeah, yeah.
Totally buy into whatever Gorilla tells you.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, if Gorilla had been, you know, if I had watched in the doctor's office and Gorilla was the guy who was diagnosing me, I'd have been comfortable with that. He seemed to understand medical anatomy pretty well.
He was very familiar with the external occipital protuberance.
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, you kind of, and, you know, they kind of go back and forth on, you know, taking control, and, you know, Hogan, you know, gets the, gets punches in the corner, and, you know, and, you know, kind of works, movesets kind of, you know, expanded a little bit from normal. He, works a, you know, back suplex, and you know, backbreaker, and although I did notice that Hogan's offense here was clearly just a touch above Warrior's as far as kind of crispness, and you know, as being a little bit more believable than Warrior's was.
Yeah, and I think I could definitely see Hogan wanting to, even in a loss, kind of outshine Warrior. And, you know, that could either go, you know, one of two ways. It could either be Hogan was working really hard and trying to do his best to really help put the Warrior over when he wins, or Hogan was trying to sandbag the Warrior, make him look ridiculous even when he beat Hogan. So it just depends on your interpretation of events. But I definitely remember, you know, being really into what Hogan was doing. And as, you know, some of the things he was doing, it just made me feel, even as a kid, that he was going to end up getting the pin, because I just thought he was putting on a better performance than the Warrior was.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Not that Warrior was bad here. I mean, he was adequate, but, you know, you can just see, you know, Hogan being, you know, a few, you know, steps ahead of him as far as being, you know, the class of workers, knowing what to do in the ring and making everything look good. They hit a double clothesline on each other, and they both stagger up at about seven, and then Warrior kind of makes a comeback, no-selling Hogan's attack, shaking the ropes and knocking him down repeatedly with clotheslines and whips to the corner. And like, Hogan's, like, falling down to Warrior's feet, like he's, you know, not really begging, but he's just, like, you know, he's slumped and he's, you know, his hands at his feet, just kind of like a dominant moment for the Warrior. And Warrior does a long bear hug, Hogan finally breaks it after he's fading, and then we get a ref bump with a Warrior accidentally careening into Hebner, and then we get a couple of visual pinfalls before Warrior getting one first after a couple of axe handles off the top. And which one thing I thought was weird was the announcers, like, point out very specifically that, like, Hogan, like, all the times that it looked like he was beaten and there was no referee, which I don't ever recall. I don't ever recall that happening. Like, so it was just a weird thing that the idea that Hogan would have, you know, been beaten so many times if the referee had not been knocked out. But anyway,
I honestly think that watching this match recently, in preparation for talking, I'm not a big fan of ref bumps in general, and I don't understand what added to this one by having a ref bump. I think they could have gone ahead and had a more of a straightforward thing without the ref bump, and I think it would have only made it better.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it didn't hurt the match for me.
No,
but
I like, if there's going to be a ref bump, I need there to be a reason for a ref bump. I really dislike ref bumps. I really dislike that there was a ref bump in Steamboat and Savage at WrestleMania 3. And that's one of the reasons why it's not like the five-star spectacular that everyone else says it is. I think that because of the ref bump in that match, it's always had like a little – it's always stuck in my craw. And this instance too. If there's a ref bump, there needs to be a reason for a ref bump. It's not going to be, oh, let's knock Hebner down. That son of a bitch, he stuffed me on gas money or something. Mm-hmm. You know, there needs to be a reason for a ref bump, in my opinion. And, you know, I was dying during the Russo era where there would be like 6 ref bumps in a match, and 11 ref bumps on a six match pay-per-view. It would kill me. So just as an aside, it doesn't take away from this match, but it always grates on me when they do that kind of thing.
Yeah, I'm definitely not a fan of them unless they're necessary here. I mean, I do think it does play in. I mean, obviously Warrior gets the visual pinfall, and then Hogan gets the visual pinfall, and, you know, I guess that was the reason to do it.
That was their reason. You know, that was their logic. But I think it would have been just as good to have like 2 false finishes there, which, you know, they might not. They do some false finishes at the end, but I wouldn't have had a problem with them doing false finish there with each of them. Yeah. Instead of doing the ref bump.
That's fair. And then Hogan ends up getting, they end up outside, and Hogan gets rammed in the post, and then back in, Warrior hits the press slam on Hogan, and which is pretty impressive for a guy Hogan's size, and hits the splash, but then Hogan kicks out at 2 and then hulks up. And then makes his, you know, comeback, and you're kind of here you go again. And then he hits the big boot, but then suddenly he goes for the leg drop, and then Warrior sits up, and then Warrior, you know, just comes off the ropes, hits the splash, and it's over. And then he's, you know, Hogan's kind of selling, you know, being forlorn and being sad, and kind of slowly ends up taking the belt and looking at it for a bit, but then he presents it to Warrior, and then they hug, and he put him over. And you kind of talked about whether it's Hogan doing the best he could or whether it's kind of trying to outshine Warrior, but honestly, I kind of feel like I think the intent was genuine for him to kind of pass the torch, or at least, you know, or make Warrior, you know, be as good, or, you know, do as much as he could for the Warrior here. It really felt more like that to me than it did, you know, any kind of trying to outshine the Warrior.
Well, I think that it's a lot of my always taking things that Hogan says and does with a grain of salt. Since then, you know, when you're a wide-eyed 9-year-old, you're not thinking about, oh, well, Hogan's going to try to sandbag the Warrior to try to make him look bad and, you know, protect his spot when he comes back after, you know, doing movies or going into retirement or wherever he ends up getting into, or, you know, just hanging out and feuding with the Earthquake. But, you know, now it makes me think about, you know, what is Hogan really doing? What are his motivations? And in the self-destruction of the Ultimate Warrior DVD, which is a kind of hilarious because it's so ridiculously over the top anti-warrior that, you know, it's not journalism at its finest.
No,
it's very much, you know, it's very much propaganda, but it's hilarious because the Warrior really is kind of crazy. And Hogan's like, oh, and I knew they made the wrong decision. Everyone was looking at me when I left, and everyone was, you know, fixed on me and blah, blah. And I don't really remember it being that way. I know the Hulkster likes to he has a very creative idea of what wrestling history was. And I don't remember that here. I remember, like, being very excited watching it that this happened. And I remember the crowd being very excited about this as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, I do think the Warrior, that the crowd sort of, I wouldn't say turned on him, but got less excited about him as, you know, through the months he was champion, or at least, you know, that the crowds dwindled in any case. Maybe the crowds that were there were still pretty excited, but, you know, that was definitely, this was met with a period of, you know, business in WWE falling, from what I understand. And obviously, yeah. Warrior didn't last. I mean, he was champion, you know, for about 10 months, you know, and they didn't go back to Warrior and Hogan at WrestleMania 7, which I think at least was at one point was the plan. So, you know, obviously, Warrior was not a success as champion, but
I don't consider him a success as champion in this reign. I do think that the match itself is a success, and I think he would, and I will give Hogan credit for this, that he put him over cleanly on the biggest stage, and gave him the opportunity, and, you know, the Warrior kind of dropped the ball for whatever reason, and people want to blame Vince or blame Hogan or whatever, but I just think the Warrior did not have it in him to be the kind of champion that they needed at this time. He was, you know, he's not a wrestling person. You know, he was a bodybuilder and got into wrestling, as opposed to people who have like a real love for the wrestling business. And I think that, you know, the numbers did dwindle and people became more interested in what Hogan was up to. And Hogan ended up feuding with Earthquake. And that was one of the big, you know, one of the big angles of my life was when Earthquake took out Hogan. And they ended up having the Warrior feuded with Rick Rude because they only had history and everything. So what happens after this match is kind of disappointing. And I was actually at the Royal Rumble 91 where he ends up dropping the belt to Sergeant Slaughter.
Oh,
and Slaughter becomes the Iraqi sympathizer, and he basically serves as a transitional champion to get the belt back on to Hogan. So Vince and company didn't even have enough faith in Warrior to be able to push for what would have been an enormous rematch, and having Hogan go one-on-one, we had to wait a long time for the rematch, and we could have waited even longer considering that the absolute abortion that they ended up putting on as their return. So if you please go look for Hogan Warrior 1. Please don't watch Hogan Warrior 2. Whatever you do.
Well, if you want to laugh, you can watch Hogan Warrior 2, I guess.
If you're really into wrestle crap, if you love wrestle crap and you love like Botchamania and stuff like that, if you want to have a giggle, then by all means. But if you're looking for an interesting match with good ring psychology and crisp moves, I would suggest you fire up, you know, anything by Bryan Danielson or AJ Styles before you're looking for Hogan Warrior 2.
Yeah. We obviously were at the Slaughter Warrior match. How did it feel? Like, did you have any idea, or do you remember anything about like the crowd atmosphere after, you know, Slaughter won that match? I'm just curious.
I remember being very upset as a young boy. This was in the Miami Arena. that I believe is no longer there. It's definitely not used for wrestling anymore. They either go to the American Airlines Arena, or WrestleMania next year is going to be at Sun Life Stadium, formerly Joe Robbie. But the Miami Arena was a smallish arena. And I remember people being legitimately angry, but it wasn't because that the Warrior lost. It was because Slaughter won. I don't, you know, when Warrior came out, and this is something I really remember because it was so crazy. And I, you know, being 9 years old and seeing this, Sherry comes out trying to get a match for Savage with the Warrior. And she's like being very, sensual and sexual with him and on her knees. And, you know, this is a lot for a 9 year old boy to take in. And if you see when she comes out and does this, like it's a little weird to, even today, I get a little creeped out about it. And I was still like taken aback by that. And I think that it was more that Slaughter was so hated as a heel than it was that Warrior ended up, you know, people being upset that Warrior lost. It was more people who were upset that Slaughter won.
Yeah. And I don't think anyone realistically believed that they would make Slaughter champion at that point, you know?
No, not at all. I mean, how could you?
Yeah.
You know, how could you ever think they were going to make the champion, the number one man in their company, you know, the Iraqi sympathizer there. And then when Hogan comes and he wins the Rumble, you know, he got a big pop. He got a big ovation. And at that point, even my 9 year old mind could figure out what was going to happen at WrestleMania. At that point that Hogan was going to go on and crush Slaughter's hopes and dreams.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that the inevitability of that kind of hurts that whole thing. And Slaughter, quite frankly, was kind of washed up at that point. So,
This is, you know, years past his prime.
Yeah.
And this was kind of like a lifetime achievement award, basically. And him agreeing to go through this very controversial kind of, angle where he became, you know, he went from being a G.I. Joe to being the Iraqi sympathizer. And I really like his work as a heel. He worked as a heel. It's like the heel drill instructor in Mid-Atlantic and stuff. And I really like his work as a heel. And, you know, a lot of people look back at this and say it's in very poor taste. And you have like the Muhammad Hassan angle that was ended up getting cut short. That was a little edgy and possibly in poor taste. And so, yeah, you're right that, you know, it became a foregone conclusion, especially after Hogan won the Rumble, that Hogan was gonna vanquish the demons. But you know, they said it was in poor taste, but look at the history of wrestling, and you're gonna see lots of characters. You know, Fritz von Erich started out as like the German Nazi, and Waldo von Erich, who was his kayfabe brother, and of course you have Nikolai Volkoff, Ivan Koloff. Nikita Koloff, the Iron Sheik. You know, whenever we've gone to war, whenever we've had an enemy, you've had characters like that. I mean, how many evil Japanese wrestlers have there been? You know, Mr. Fuji, Mr. Saito, fill in the blank. So anytime America has had an enemy, there's been a wrestling character that was the epitome of that. Now, this wasn't an Iraqi. This was an Iraqi sympathizer, making it even worse because it wasn't an Iraqi supporting Saddam Hussein. It was an American hero who had turned his back on his country supporting Saddam Hussein, which actually makes it more creative. So, in retrospect, I think the angle was interesting, and they ended up being fine, and Hogan won, and the Warrior ended up taking on Randy Savage, and they had a very memorable match at WrestleMania 7. And then, ridiculously enough, Savage ends up getting pinned in the retirement match. And the following year at WrestleMania, he wins the title against Ric Flair, which was not very fair to Flair.
Well, you know, it's a pretty fantastic match, no matter what.
You see what I did there?
It was clever. I liked that. That was good.
The best thing about WrestleMania 8 was the commentary. And now we're going to veer way off, but since this is fairtoflair.com, I feel a little okay with this. You know, Mr. Perfect and Flair are cheating the whole match, and at the very end, Savage grabs Flair's tights, and that's how he pins him. And when Heenan comes back to the booth and gets into it with Gorilla, all he can do is talk about the fact that Savage grabbed his tights to pin Flair, not the 400 things that Mr. Perfect and Flair did throughout the match. And when Gorilla calls him out on it, Heenan's like, I'm not here to talk about that. I'm a broadcast journalist. I'm a consultant. I'm a financial advisor. And Gorilla's yelling at him, you're a liar. You're a liar. If you go to YouTube, you can do a search and you can get the commentary for WrestleMania 8 between Gorilla and the Brain, and it is absolutely awesome.
Yeah, definitely, yes. So
anyway, ultimately, this is how much good came from the Ultimate Warrior's title reign is that we're talking about other title reigns 2 years later.
Yes,
that memorable this 10-month reign was for the Ultimate Warrior.
Yeah. Besides the good matches with the recruit, that was pretty much the highlight of Warrior's reign. There wasn't a whole lot else going on.
And he was a head case, and he really was. And I will say for the skewing of the self-destruction of the Ultimate Warrior DVD, you know, there is some truth that, you know, he was put over strong by Hogan in the, you know, the biggest event of the year. He was put over strong by Andre the Giant. As in intercontinental championship and world heavyweight championship matches, where Andre would be pinned by him in like 3 minutes, 4 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you're talking about Andre the Giant, a man who had kayfabe not been defeated in 15 years until Hogan beat him at WrestleMania 3. You know, Andre the Giant is one of the most recognizable names in all of wrestling, and you know, he, according to the documentary, hated the Warrior. If you ask the Warrior, it was Bobby Heenan, and the Andre loved him. Now, I have my own opinion about who's telling the truth in this one. But, you know, Andre put him over and over in house shows all the time. Hogan put him over. Rick Rude got really good, you know, three-and-a-half-star matches out of him. I don't know what else could have been done to put him over. I mean, they really tried their best to make him the next Hogan. But I think that character, you know, had a shelf life. There's only so far you can go. And he didn't have the kind of elasticity and the kind of longevity that Hulk Hogan had, that was able to go for, you know, the better part of 6 years as champion. The Warrior would never have been able to do that. He didn't even make it 1 year.
Yeah, I just think it was, you know, the lack. He just didn't have the ability to emotionally connect with people the way that Hogan did. I think that's basically the difference, you know.
Well, he was crazy. I mean, Hogan would cut the occasional crazy promo. The Warrior would cut nothing but crazy promos. He had this, Hogan said it in the DVD, he has like a maniacal edge. And he may have been able to make it work today, but I don't see it working for now. I mean, I was never a big Warrior fan. As a kid, you know, during this time, I was still a big Hogan fan, and I remember Hogan feuding with Earthquake after WrestleMania 6. I had to be reminded later, you know, when I got older, about the Warrior and Rick Rude having a feud, because mm-hmm. you know, that just didn't stand out. So, you know, that tells you that, you know, he didn't have that many memorable matches, memorable in good way, and he had a very basic offense, and he would blow up. And the Honky Tonk Man is very critical of him and says, you know, you don't run down to the ring. You make it look like you're running down to the ring. And, you know, who can say, you know, he had a really good look. He had really good music. Everyone worked with him and tried to put him over. And unfortunately, it was a disaster. And he would end up leaving, coming back, and leaving and coming back. And he's back on good terms with WWE now, and there was rumors they may put him in the Hall of Fame, and his picture is in the new the intro, the "Yes Sir, We Promised You a Big Main Event Tonight," with, you know, they added Gorgeous George, and they took out Hogan, and they, you know, put in DiBiase and the Warrior and stuff. When they edited it the last time, they included the Warrior in there, so he's back on good terms. But, you know, this is the wrestling business. You know, Eric Bischoff and Vince McMahon for years tried to kill the, you know, one another, and they ended up doing business together. So the Warrior will probably end up in the Hall of Fame at some point, and I don't know who, you know, they'll have, everything will be forgiven. But I mean, the man has legally changed his name to Warrior. What else can you say?
I got nothing. I will admit I got nothing else.
Yeah, what else can you say about that? So, you know, Hogan and Warrior have this really good match, and Warrior seems to be put on the precipice. You know, he's the world champion, and he's going to carry the torch for the World Wrestling Federation, and he has a very subpar 10-month reign that's basically, you know, a time of you know, it's kind of like when Kevin Nash was the champion for about a year and business went really down. And then he ends up going back and forth and disappearing and showing up in WCW for three matches. And the only real lasting thing that ever came out of that was, unfortunately, that he injured Davey Boy Smith and with the trapdoor thing. And everything was just ridiculous. So they thought they had the next Hogan. I don't know if that was ever going to be the truth. But the match itself at WrestleMania 6 was very good. Very, very good. And it's unfortunate that, you know, the aftermath was kind of wasted. Because if they had been able to have, you know, maybe someone else and have that kind of a good match, you know, that could have happened. They could have passed the torch. I just don't think Warrior was the guy. If they had had like a healthy Kerry Von Erich or someone like that, who they could count on, you know, they could do something like that where he could have been someone to carry the torch.
I've thought about this before, but I wonder what would have happened if they had given, because Brett and, was given his first singles push briefly in 88 and did okay, but wasn't, you know, just ended up, you know, going back to the Hart Foundation pretty quickly and just kind of doing whatever for a while and doing that. But I wonder what would have happened if just say that, they gave, something happened with Warrior, and they decided, well, we'll give Bret Hart the Intercontinental title and let him beat Honky Tonk Man instead of Warrior. And then, you know, if they, you know, kind of built Bret the same way, he was a strong Intercontinental champion, but was kind of like, you know, the technical marvel and all that. And, you know, when you're building to this show that you're building to this show, you know, which is obviously in Canada, and you know, it was really years later before Brett was like a Canadian hero. But you know, kind of the idea, like if you know, history just kind of altered it just a little bit. You know, whether maybe the move to kind of more, you know, the stronger workers of, you know, if Michaels and Bret Hart happened a couple years earlier, whether that would have, you know, prevented business from, you know, falling apart in the mid 90s or, you know, just it's a fun what if. Obviously, there's no right answer to it, but.
Yeah, and I'm a big fan of alternate history and what if, and pro wrestling has so many what ifs. It could even go back to, you know, what if the Honky Tonk Man hadn't beaten Ricky Steamboat for the title? I mean, if Ricky Steamboat doesn't take time off for his kid, and he's the Intercontinental Champion in 1987, does he never leave for the NWA again? And is he the man that they think could be the one to pass the torch to for Hulk Hogan? And you know, do they have some kind of face versus face match at WrestleMania 5 or 6? I mean, that's, you know, so many ways they could have gone, and then what does that lead to? And I think, you know, any of these things would have, you know, any of these guys would have had a more interesting title reign than the Warrior. Of course, they didn't know that, unfortunately. And I think it's one of those things, there's a guest booker series by Kayfabe Commentaries, and I would love to see them rebook this era, like the post no holds barred Hulk Hogan era.
Yeah,
because there was always that story, people say Vince really wanted Hogan and Tiny Lister to be the main event at WrestleMania 6. Mm-hmm. And then no holds barred was awful, and Tiny Lister was an actor who couldn't really wrestle. He could do that neck breaker thing, and he could yell Hulk Hogan. But then they brought in Savage to carry the weight in tag matches with Hogan and Brutus. So what if, you know, Vince loses his mind and decides, well, no, we're going to have Hogan and Zeus at WrestleMania 6, and Hogan's obviously going to win, and the Warrior just becomes like an afterthought, and Hogan holds on to the belt for two more years. You know, there's lots of different ways it could have gone, you're right. And I think all of them end up being better for business than the way things panned out.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't see Hogan Zeus at WrestleMania 6 being anything other than a disaster. But
it would have been awful. But Hogan then holds on to the title, and then they move in other directions, and he feuds with Earthquake, and he feuds with Slaughter, and maybe they do the Shock and have Slaughter somehow beat him at the Rumble instead of Warrior. Just that would have been like kids would have been crying.
Would have yes. been
like Miz won the title. Kids would have been crying, like, thus, you know, if they have the Iraqi sympathizer. But that would have been really good for business. They might have been able to sell out the L.A. Coliseum as they tried to do for WrestleMania 7. And then they ended up having to move to the sports arena, and they said, oh, it's because of bomb threats and all these things. Yes. Yes, they went from a 100,000-seat stadium to a 10,000-seat arena because of bomb scares.
Yes.
Not because of bad ticket sales.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's fun to wonder. Who knows? But
oh, absolutely. And yeah. this is a great what if because, like I said, you know, the direction they ended up going in was probably ended up being maybe the worst. Because even Hogan retaining the title is better than Warrior's title reign, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And then you'll have, you know, all the ridiculousness of Warrior. But I will say Warrior is probably one of the few men who can claim to have beaten Triple H in like 4 minutes or whatever at WrestleMania. So he has that going for him.
Yeah, he's probably the only person to ever beat Hogan and Triple H WrestleMania. So
yeah.
That's
I have to think. Yeah, I can't think of anyone. Because I don't think The Rock and Triple H ever went at WrestleMania.
They went in the four-way, but Triple H won that match. So yeah.
The first heel to leave as champion.
Yeah.
Because it's Hunter. Hunter is greater than everything. Hunter, greater sign, fill in the blank. He's the king of kings. How big are your testicles to compare yourself, to give yourself the nickname, the king of kings?
There's
two men who have ever called themselves the King of Kings, and one of them was the Son of God.
Well, you know, draw your own conclusions. I don't know.
Now we're veering way off, but the Warriors take on Hunter in that like 3 minute WrestleMania 12 match. So he would have to make up with Hunter. He'd have to make up with Hunter because Hunter's the future of the company, which seems to be a good thing. So. I think the Warrior will end up being in the Hall of Fame, and he'll probably give some incoherent speech at the Hall of Fame ceremony. And the thing that he's done recently, the Warrior's kind of history now, is that he made that speech at the University of Connecticut where he criticized gay people, and he's become kind of a far-right winger. And he was at some sports memorabilia show, and he refused to talk to the Iron Sheik. And then this gave just the Iron Sheik more ammunition for one of his rants. So that's what he's up to now, is shoot interview fodder for the Iron Sheik.
Yeah, yeah.
And Hulk Hogan is on his way back to TNA. Spoiler alert.
Yeah, well, actually, when people listen to this, they probably will have already happened. So.
Oh, Hulk Hogan has come back to TNA.
Yes, we recorded these shows a little early, guys. So,
he's your world champion, and what else? What else can I spoil? That's not really a spoiler.
Let's see. Well, we don't know yet whether Hunter and Taker's going to be career versus streak. It's only speculation. So the people who listen to this will probably know, but we don't know yet. So
we don't know if for sure HBK is going to be the special referee, even though that's what everyone seems to be saying.
Yeah. So
all we know for sure is that Sting has won the TNA championship. That's going to air next week.
Yes.
But for you, it'll probably have aired several weeks before.
Yes. So
he's probably lost the title and gone to WWE by now.
Yeah, very possible. You know, there's, you know, the future is very difficult to predict. Always in motion, it is.
Wow, you're getting very heavy on me.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I was Yoda-ing on you, so you know.
I know we don't get that on Future Endeavors.
Yeah. Well, you know, you get a different vibe at WrestleSpective. You know, we kind of have a different pace, kind of a different flow. You know, it's
that kind of looks like Yoda, but aside from that, there are no other comparisons.
Yeah, I'm sure he'll appreciate that.
He's gonna get. I mean, this is what I do. He is my whipping boy. He is you know, if we were in the Star Wars universe, I would be Darth Vader, and he would be the guy in the first Star Wars movie that Darth Vader chokes.
Okay. All right. Well, fair enough. Why don't you let everybody know where they can check out your stuff?
Well, if you come down to my house about 4:30 every day, I'm sunbathing nude in the back with olive oil slathered all over me, and you can check out all my stuff. you can listen in every Sunday at 11 p.m. Eastern to Future Endeavors, the award-winning wrestling podcast with myself, DX Don Mega, and Corey Santiago. You can follow us on Twitter at Future Endeavors, all one word, and you can follow me on Twitter at Fatman After Dark. You can also read some of my writing at the Fighting Geek blog. It is www.fightinggeek.com. At the taping of this, I have just written a piece on the return of Dwayne The Rock Johnson, but there'll probably be lots of other incredible things that I've written up there by the time you're listening to this. You can also find me on Facebook at Fatman After Dark. You can also find me at fatmanafterdark.com and at your local Wawa.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for talking WrestleMania 6 with me. I always appreciate it. And everyone, thanks for listening. You can, of course, check us out at WrestleSpective.com or at FairToFlare.com. We got lots of interesting stuff. Of course, this podcast series, one of these shows being posted every day until the day of WrestleMania, talking about the final matches in WrestleMania history. So keep checking us out, and thanks a lot for listening.